Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Today on the program, we're visiting with Mr. David Luck, the CEO and co-founder of Capital on Tap, the credit card built for small businesses. And Mr. Luck, thanks for joining us here today.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
And certainly appreciate your time. Looking forward to hearing about this as well. So for starters, what key leadership principles do you believe have been instrumental in driving Capital on Tap success in the competitive finance industry? Let's start there.
You know, interestingly enough, I think the fact that we raise such little equity compared to competitors really shaped how we built the business. You know, how much money you raise and who you raise with fundamentally changes how you kind of need to build going forward. So just as context, you know, we're a 500 person plus company. We've raised no institutional equity. It's been a few high net worths. And I just want to talk you through how that kind of shapes growth. If you think, when I look at, you know, companies that went public over the last few years, most of them weren't profitable, which I just find super interesting. And the SPACs, almost none of them were profitable. And these are some of the best businesses out there, right? They've grown to be pretty big, and you know, they've managed to make it to the public markets. And it's just interesting to think about why they're not profitable, because they've been going on for quite a while. And I think some of this is driven by what I view as a slightly warped view of venture capital, where, you know, a lot of businesses don't need to raise a lot of money. If you're building a really big business, you know, in a car manufacturing or maybe in real estate, you just have to, raise a lot of money, because that type of business needs money. But there's a lot of businesses that don't. You know, if your biggest cost is people maybe that are coding software, and you go raise, you know, a couple hundred million, then it's just really hard to get profitable. You're expected to go really fast and to put that money to work. And so I think it's just super important to ask yourself if it's a good idea, because it's going to potentially drive a lack of discipline. I think some people have succeeded, but I think it can be really put you in a challenging position for the future if you do that. I think for the investors, I think it can make a lot more sense. You know, they've got a whole portfolio, and if they hit a few home runs, it works out. And, you know, let's not forget they get paid on what they deploy. But as a founder, I actually think it might, in many cases, lower your chance of success. Because if you think about it, if you need to aim at building a company that's worth over $1 billion in value that you own less of versus maybe a company that's worth 40, 50 million of value, I think the latter could actually be, in many ways, a lot higher probability. For us, that's really shaped what we built. Because we never had a lot of money in the bank, we were always really disciplined. We had to think hard about, you know, does this product fit our customers? You know, do they love the product? Can we make a little bit of money right from the beginning? Where I think if you have a couple hundred million in the bank, you got to go hire a bunch of people. There's a drive to do that. And sometimes it can be too soon, where ultimately it's hard to build, you know, an enduring profitable company. So that's the difference for us. It's worked out. I think it's not for everyone, but it's something for a founder to think about when they're raising money.
And sort of a follow-up question here, in a sector with constant regulatory changes and compliance challenges, how do you balance the need for innovation while ensuring strict adherence to industry standards and best practices? Touch on that if you would. I'm sure listeners would appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, look, one of the things that helps us is we deal with small businesses. So we're just, we have less regulation than consumers, which actually matters a lot, but we're still regulated, and it's super important to us. But oddly enough, so we started about 10 years ago. One of the most important things for us is really timing with regards to regulation. So I think if you were in the sweet spot after the 2008 crisis, call it, you know, 2009 or 10 to 2015, it was a real different time than now. The obvious reason it was different is because a lot of the competitors, at least in our space in fintech, the products just weren't that good. So it was easier to join in and build something new. But I think what's less obvious is it was a much less regulated space. If you think about what's happened in the last 10 years, you know, you had neobanks, you had peer-to-peer at the beginning, you had crypto, buy now, pay later, all these new organizations that, you know, the regulators didn't know what to deal with. And so over the past few years, they finally caught up and put in a lot of new regulation. And of course, that's great in the sense that it protects the customers, but it also puts a lot of barriers to entry up. And the way that happens is when you're putting a new regulation, you have to talk to the folks that are providing the services. In many instances in our industry, it's banks. And the reason you have to do that is you can't put in regulation that doesn't work for the incumbents. Otherwise, they just can't operate and you can shut everything down. And so you tend to find that the compliance is somewhat built around the incumbents. And so what we see, you know, we're quite a bit bigger than we used to be. We're 500 plus people. It's actually fine for us because we now have a team that only thinks about the regulations and we grew up as they started coming into place. But if you were to start now, it'd be a much bigger hill to climb. You'd have to raise a lot more capital to do with regulation. So I think the timing was really important. And even if you take a charitable view, it's harder to join now, I think, because of regulations. I think, you know, you could take a less charitable view of regulatory capture. I think, what is it, Bill Gurley came out with a good speech at the All In Summit a few weeks ago. I think you can go listen to that. I like to think the best of folks. But no matter how you look at it, the timing of when you join is a big impact on your success to deal with kind of the increasing regulation.
Yeah, thanks for the feedback there, and that is most helpful. Now, looking at the customer, their expectations in the finance industry are constantly evolving. How do you also ensure that Capital on Tap remains customer-centric and responsive to the changing needs and preferences of your clients?
You know, just I think we start with product, and then I'll talk a little bit how we build. But product, we keep it simple. We just try to not sell anything we wouldn't want to buy. And we find that life's a lot easier if you can try to have the best product on the market. And that sounds kind of obvious. So the litmus test we do on that is, you know, if you had to ask 10 potential customers and say, look, here's three of the best products that you could buy, which one do you want? You really want to keep working hard until yours is the one that they put on top. And to try to get on top, I think what we found is we're absolutely constantly testing. One of our values is just pilot. So everyone in the organization can test new things. And it's the only way, you know, you continue to test and iterate to improve on the product has been a big win for us. And I know it sounds simple, but if you have, you know, several hundred people testing and understanding that they're allowed to spend money without permission to improve the product, you actually just move so much faster than an incumbent that doesn't allow that. And I'll give you like one example, I think that's tangible too, that on the way we approach service and customers, a lot of times people think of customer service as kind of a cost center, but our view is, our customers are worth a lot of money, and if we provide great service, you know, they're going to recommend us to other folks. They're going to stay with us longer. So what we actually do is look at this as a way to delight the customer, not as something just to save money on. So in practical terms, what does that mean? You know, it's 24/7. You get instant pickup from a well-trained individual that can actually solve the problem. And, you know, if they can't solve it, they'll say, look, I know your time's precious. I'll call you back when I've got it solved if that's more convenient. We don't do anything, you know, press one to get put on hold, press two to go to somebody who's not, you know, going to be that helpful. But it's just one example. I think if you look at things differently and don't look at, you know, customer service as a cost, but a way to drive revenue, I think it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. You cannot skip investing in customer service. Thanks for pointing that out today. We're speaking with David Luck, the CEO and co-founder of Capital on Tap, the credit card built for small businesses. He's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, looking at leadership, once again, leadership often involves making tough decisions, as you know. Can you share an example of a challenging decision you had to make as a CEO and the lessons that you learned from that experience? I'm sure we could have quite a few takeaways from your response to that.
I think one of the hardest things for me is choosing what not to do. Now that we're a little bit bigger, new opportunities come by all the time, and it's easy to want to jump on them. You know, you'll have maybe a big partnership that could be transformational. And so we try to stay incredibly focused. And one of the reasons we do this is because if you look at a lot of big companies that are out there, even ones that have been out there 10, 20 plus years, most of them don't do a bunch of different things really well. Most of them do, you know, one thing really well. And if they're really lucky, they'll maybe do two things. And so we have a saying that, you know, everything is really hard, even the stuff that doesn't seem to be hard. And so a lot of times I run around and just try to make sure we do less is, I think, one of the big challenges. The second example is just on the people front. I think any leader or founder, it's easy to think that you're going to come up with all the ideas. But the reality is, if you're going to have any success at scale, it's going to be the team around you. And I think everyone puts a ton of effort trying to find good people. And that's what you have to do that to succeed. But you also have to be the one to make the tough decisions. If it's not working out, in the end, it's not going to be, it's best for everyone to kind of to make a change. And so often I find that the right time to move someone on is kind of when you first consider whether or not it's the right time to move them on. It's very rare that you look at someone and say, you know, it's really not working, and this is a senior executive. Does it make sense to keep them on board?
And there you go. Also appreciate your thoughts in that regard as well. Now, as a leader in the finance industry, what role do you see Capital on Tap playing in driving positive change and contributing to the overall growth and stability of the financial ecosystem?
I mean, look, I think we've got a really long way to go. I mentioned to your first question, we never raised a lot of money. Even though we're 500 plus people now, we still view ourselves as a startup, kind of that chip on our shoulder where every day we come in, we need to improve what we do, or we, you know, we're kind of paranoid that we won't be there, even though we have a great business now. And I think that's just because not long ago we didn't have a business. You know, you don't have customers, you don't have revenue when you first start. So we still view ourselves as almost a startup that could grow 10x from here out. So we're optimistic on our growth trajectory. But in terms of being part of kind of a stable ecosystem for the financial world, my simplest view is, you just have to be really cautious about liquidity, right? Everything goes wrong when you run out of cash. And so we're really careful to have dry powder, because eventually, you know, you're going to hit a recession, you're going to hit some bumps along the road. And if you don't have money, it's too late. So you've got to be prepared in advance. So we're always really careful to have more money than we think we'll ever need.
Mr. Luck, certainly appreciate your joining us on behalf of Capital on Tap and what you're doing in the space. Really do appreciate all the insight and information shared as well. And before you go into conclusion, any closing thoughts, a final word, or any advice that you'd like to lend us as we do conclude today?
I think, look, the world's changed. There's less capital out there. And I think it's actually really healthy. I think there's been a dynamic in the startup world where all businesses think they need to raise a ton of money and it's a badge of honor. And I think some businesses do, right? If you're building the next Tesla, or you're building semiconductor manufacturing facility, you know, you need a ton of money. But there's a lot of businesses out there that don't need a ton of money. And I would highly recommend, you know, early founders to think about, you know, if I raise less, is this better than raising more? Even though it's easy to celebrate, I think a lot of that's driven by the fact that it's definitely, I think, better for the investor or the VC, but I think you get a question if it's better for you and your team, your founding team. So it's something that I think people are getting wise to, and I think everyone should think about more.
Thank you for those concluding remarks. We do appreciate, again, the advice and all the information shared in your time. If listeners wanted to tap into, no pun intended, tap into Capital on Tap, where is the best place to do so?
CapitalOnTap.com. And if you got any issues as a customer, just reach out to me at Dave@OnTap.com.
Easy enough. And of course, listeners, as always, you can find that link within the show notes of this broadcast as well. Mr. Luck, all the best. Thanks for your spending a moment with us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Same to you. Thanks so much.
Again, we've been speaking with David Luck, the CEO and co-founder of Capital on Tap, the credit card built for small businesses. And for all the details, visit CapitalOnTap.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of VPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune in to our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com. This is the ePodcast Network.